The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really Iron Man, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another assigned episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
We have sound effects again. Yes.
Guess who has come out of undercover work?
Sound effects were missed last week.
Indeed. Yeah, I missed you guys too. Don't get it twisted. I missed you guys too.
But don't worry, you were still on the show via yearbook
photos. Yearbook pictures! Oh, God!
If you haven't seen the episode, go to the YouTube channel and go to episode 180. It was great.
Yes, yes. Thank you again. Listen, thank you again to... I was going to do this later in the show, but I'll just get out of the way now. Thank you again to @MattWang97, and I'm not sure what Crystal Velasquez's Twitter is, but she is an author and the writer of Just Princesses. To go back to the last episode, Roddy Cat said, episode 180, for the Comic Book Chronicles interview with Crystal Velasquez, the writer behind Just Princesses. Thank you again to both of them.
Her Twitter handle is...
C Velasquez 6,
yeah.
There you go.
So yes, this is the Comic Book Chronicles, part of theclicknation.com. Go to theclicknation.com to find all the previous episodes of Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. On the homepage, you can see social media links to our Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Google+. Make sure to go onto all those social media websites. Subscribe or follow us. We are a part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network, a.k.a. the CSPN. That's cspn.us. Do it today.
Yep.
Let's see. We also have a shop where you can buy Comic Book Chronicles merchandise. Go to redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. We are minus a co-host tonight. @PCN_Dirt's not with us tonight, but go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. And you've heard all our voices tonight, but to let you know, I'm TimDog98, @RoddyCat, and @Agent_70 on Twitter is where you can find us. Alrighty. So, of course, our first segment of the night is going to be comic book reviews. Let's see what we want to talk about first this week.
I was going to say, I think there's the one big issue this week, right?
Was there a big one?
Well, I think so. I think so because, yeah, because it was on, like, I think in the news and or social media feeds.
It was also a $4.99 issue.
That's right, it's exercised.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but we'll get into that.
Well, I think it's got 33 pages, so it's what it is for the bigger.
Yeah, for the amount of pages... I see the $4.99, but I'm trying to figure out what justified making it a larger than normal size issue.
Yeah, because for the amount of stuff that was in there, it was like, what in the world is going on here? Which I guess, hey, let's go ahead and tackle that now.
Then. Right. So ultimately,
Civil War tie-in issue, but that part was like, they could have cut some of the stuff in the book. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, why do you think they could have cut any of the Civil War stuff? I thought this issue seemed to tell kind of a complete tale, and it didn't feel like it was longer than normal. Maybe it was because it was the digital copy. I did pick up my physical copy, and I did notice that it was on the larger side.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I don't think I thought it was a pretty well crafted story from front to back, because what it does is it basically describes how Steve Rogers has been changed fundamentally, and I'm going to ring the spoiler bell because obviously we're it's not a spoiler to talk about how Cap is going in a very different direction in the wake of Secret Wars. So Cap is and it's no secret now that Cap is an agent of Hydra who's basically undercover as Captain America, and there's a few kind of scenes that really describe how different this Captain America, this Steve Rogers, really is. And I thought those were very important, specifically his interactions with a guest appearing character, the Red Ghost. I thought that was a pretty important, you know, scene for the character and how, you know, what his new status quo is.
Yeah, Peter's going to have a field day with that part.
Ha! Although it is kind of sad, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, if that's really what's happening, I'm like, damned. You know, that's pretty rough. These are old and long-standing characters.
Right. See, that's the part I'm kind of wondering about. Because, yeah, there's been a lot of death and dismemberment in the last couple of issues with
certain folks.
And then that's like, there was enough going on here that was just kind of turning this into a slightly different book altogether. Especially with the Taskmaster stuff, because it's like he's turning detective in that one part. So I guess that's going to play in somewhere. Like the part with Cap itself and the flashbacks, as it were, kind of being what they are, and the part where the Thunderbolts show up, you know, tying back into Pleasant Hill, which is strange. But to answer your question about the Civil War tie-in stuff, it was basically like a page. It's not even a page. It was like a panel or two where that stuff kind of comes in, and it's basically just like, well, I'll, you know, hey, this is going on, and so that cover is like misleading, first of all.
There's a lot of talking around Civil War, and I guess on one panel, Cap made the statement how the heroes fighting amongst themselves will distract from our ultimate goals.
Right, and that was the only Civil War tie-in. So that's why I was like, well, okay, I see that, but it was like that didn't have to be, which I know that's what they do, but that didn't necessarily have to be enough to make it a tie-in issue, you know. Like, I figured it would have been more than that.
Yeah, Cap, Captain Marvel, and Iron Man only appeared in, like, flashbacks, right?
Right. But was that Captain Marvel?
I feel like it was only flashbacks they were shown in.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, they showed one flashback. So.
And then, speaking of flashbacks, they showed, you know, the parallel story of what Steve Rogers believes is his past that's been manipulated by Kobik. We see the scenes of, I guess, what happens to his mother, and then I guess maybe how he was taken in by that mysterious lady whose name I forget.
Eliza.
Eliza, who's, I guess, maybe raised him inside Hydra.
Right.
I wonder if he actually thinks that she's still alive, like, today.
The question is, I wonder if she actually is still alive.
Yeah.
Or even existed.
Well, there's that, too. You know.
Yeah. I do. The only part that I actually enjoyed was the tying into the current Thunderbolts run.
Right.
Even though I'm not reading that book, but at least it was like, you know, hey, he does know where Kobik is. Or does he know that Bucky
has Kobik? He says he knows, he says he knows, which I'm kind of curious as to how he knows, but...
I think Bucky probably told him. I think Bucky probably told him in the first issue of Thunderbolts.
Oh, okay.
Right, and spoiler alert. Kobik is not so keen on communicating with Cap, or Bucky having to communicate with Cap.
Right. Which that part kind of makes sense, because if I remember correctly, she had been talking to Red Skull.
Right.
So I'm sure this is going to come out in some plan in a few issues.
Right. I also wanted to touch on... go ahead, Tim. I don't want to...
I was just going to say the issue ends with Cap saying what his plans are for dealing with the Red Skull.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I saw that part and I was like, oh, it's quote unquote this story, except for a different person would be the one, you know, a similarly like person would have been the target going here. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. A couple of things I wanted to make note of. We were referring to the Red Ghost scene earlier, and we're starting to see why this particular version of Cap has a pointy shield again. He uses it to some effect. No, you know,
as he has been in the last couple of issues, so I was like, oh man.
And we also get a weird, like, one page, and I totally forgot that this character was around, a one page interlude with the new Quasar.
Mm-hmm.
And the old Quasar. I forgot about that character too.
Right, and the old Quasar. I was very surprised. I was like, what are they doing here?
Well, I was like, because that's where the thing was getting me. I was like, wait, they're just throwing a good bit in this book, which assuming is going to tie back all together at some point. I was like, okay, first we're over here with this stuff, then we're over here with this stuff, and oh, look, Quasar comes in. Like, wait, what does that have to do with anything?
Yeah, Quasar felt sort of forced in.
Or, like I said, maybe not, because it's probably something that's going to be... Clearly, it got brought up for a reason, so I would assume, especially since they brought up the Pleasant Hill stuff in the first place, so... I'm like, okay, well, clearly all of this is going to tie back, because this is going to come back around to the cube and Kubrick, and at least there was a tie that made some sort of sense, but it was still kind of like, oh, that's out of nowhere.
Right.
So, okay.
Now, whether that justifies the bigger issue and the price they're in, I don't know. But it was, I guess, not terrible. There's just a lot going on in it.
I wonder if, and this is just my speculation, I wonder if they're bringing in this cosmic-powered character as a foil, an opposite to the Cosmic Cube, and have her play some sort of role in that. You know, some kind of opposite role. That's the main reason, I think, to have this character floating around in the storyline.
Mm.
They've never made the quantum bands to be that powerful, but it's interesting to see their inclusion, you know, this character's inclusion in the storyline.
That's true. Or maybe it'll end up being something that's like, well, she was stronger. She's going to unleash some more powers that it had at the, you know, the original Quasar.
He couldn't harness. I gotcha.
Yeah. Or maybe they're going to just set it up so they can put her in another team book somewhere.
Yeah. Yep. All right. So that's Captain America number 4.
What about International Iron Man number 6?
Oh, I read this. I'm sorry, I didn't put it on the list.
I actually didn't mind it so much. This series itself, telling the story of who Tony Stark's biological parents are, it's just kind of been there for me, especially because it's taken, 5 issues to finally get to before we actually find out who his mother is. And of course, his parents have to be tied to S.H.I.E.L.D. somehow.
Of course.
I thought I guess the obvious route would have been to tie him to some Marvel characters that have been around for decades. So that's probably why they went the other route, just make up 2 new characters.
It's funny, they gave him Peter Parker's old parents' origin. Because Richard and Mary Parker were supposed to be S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, and now Tony Stark's parents are, you know, basically S.H.I.E.L.D. agents.
Go figure.
Right?
Yeah, really.
His mother, is Amanda Armstrong or something like that?
Right.
She was a musician who got recruited into S.H.I.E.L.D. because her father, I guess, who was also a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent in disguise, was killed, and they sort of profiled her to be a someone they could use where she can go on tour and travel all around the country with her band, but also, I guess, do like little side jobs for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right,
like,
as a good cover.
Yeah, deliver this jump drive to this agent or something along those lines. And then we see she had one job that went south, and her cover somehow was blown, but she was rescued and saved by another S.H.I.E.L.D. agent who she had met prior, and I'm not even sure they were actually married or not. I guess we'll find out in the next issue.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think you're jumping ahead.
Yeah.
Because I think we end this book, this particular issue, with how, you know, like, I think it's how they met, and then something's basically happening once, you know, when her mission goes south and this agent saves her, they're still in the middle of danger, and that's the cliffhanger ending.
Have my Iron Man shirt on, as a matter of fact.
Nice.
The Michael Cho variant cover.
Cool.
But, my notes for International Iron Man number 6 was, it's a very fast read. Was surprised I was already done when I reached the final page. Like, it was a simple read. It was like, okay, yeah, I'm reading. Then all of a sudden, it was like, you know, to be continued. I was like, whoa, wait. I felt like I only flipped through 10 pages. But
well, there's a couple of pages of just Tony Stark's mom singing. So went pretty quick.
All right. All right. What else do we want to get into?
Well, I guess, you haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I guess we can touch on Mosaic real quick.
Tell us about it.
So if you did not know, and we're going to, I guess, get to this later anyway, so this is a prelude issue for the ongoing, I guess it's ongoing?
It's an ongoing, yeah.
Okay. This is 12 pages, so we get kind of a, I guess, what would be an actual intro story, but we don't get an intro into the character. This is actually basically, it's like, this could have been the start of what we should have gotten in Uncanny Inhumans a couple months ago, but it still doesn't really, it's still not a complete story. So basically what we have is the character Mosaic, I guess, talking while he's trying to infiltrate a shield installation for a reason. And that's brought up, but I'll just say, in case you want to read it, but you kind of see what's going on in his mind and how he operates and loosely that. But you don't necessarily know what he's doing this for or why, because you never really get to that point, which I'm assuming, again, is going to come out in the first issue whenever it comes back. And we don't get still any origin story, which is the main thing I've been wanting out of it. So, but
so he's already got his powers and stuff at this point?
Yep. Yeah. And you don't necessarily see him actually until, like, the last page of it. But, like I said, you kind of see, like, if you read Uncanny Inhumans and remember that part of it, this kind of expands on that without being anything to do with that. Okay. As far as what he does.
And this was the backup story to the annual, right? Is that what it was?
I don't know.
I actually didn't read Uncanny Inhumans annual.
So if that was the case, then hey, you know, you don't know, if you've read that, you don't have to read this. But yeah, like I said, it was just a little bit of a teaser of what I assume we're going to get when the book actually comes out, and at some point we're going to get some origin. But if you're going into this thinking that this was going to be that, no.
All right.
So it got my curiosity because I wasn't really, you know, I probably was going to check out the book anyway, but there's still a couple things I kind of want to find out about this character.
Listen, if it has a hip hop cover, I'm gonna get it. So
it does. And I have no idea what
it's kind of like a foregone conclusion.
So. Yeah,
but you know, in any case, I'm looking forward to that. I'd like to see them try to launch a new Inhuman character. Although I'm not a fan of the NBA, you know, being tied in somehow.
Well, yeah, and that was the thing, because that was part of that was like, why did the character have to be this and that and he's basically, as we've said before, he's basically Deadman from the DC universe, but he's Marvel version now, and there was kind of some issues I kind of have with that, but maybe it's going to work out. I don't know.
I don't mind giving him an occupation.
Well, it's not that. The fact that he has occupation is, I guess, is what occupation and the fact that he has his inhuman powers and these powers just so happen to make him into this now where he was, you know, something else entirely, you know, before that. I don't know. It's just, like I said, I have it in my thoughts. I just can't put it out directly. But by the time the book comes, I'm sure some things will clear up.
All right. Cool. So what do we got next?
Let's see. What's something y'all read? What, Star Wars 22?
Oh, I didn't read
that. Yeah, read that.
In 10 easy steps, you'll learn how to steal a Star Destroyer.
No kidding.
A step-by-step booklet.
Is that what's in this issue? Okay.
It wasn't set up that way, but it's pretty much what it was. Because you're not really told what's going on in the going into it. But as you go through, you see, okay, you start seeing the steps that they're taking and whatnot. So, yeah, so basically what we have is our rebel crew are on a mission. By the way, I love that first page. It was just kind of a great, especially coming off of the crawl page. You know, it almost comes in like episode 3, sort of. You could just imagine that it did. But we find them in the midst of this big battle with the Star Destroyer and a bunch of TIE fighters around, and, you know, they're kind of swamped, but they have a mission to complete. They seemingly destroy Star Destroyer that they kind of went after, but in essence, they actually stole it. And in that, apparently, they seem to have another mission that they're going to use with the destroyer that they have co-opted, to which we don't know what that is just yet, because, you know, that's how the issue ends. But outside of that, it was a pretty decent was a pretty decent instruction on how to do that, and you know, our crew get into the shenanigans that they normally do. So, what's weird was it kind of feels like Star Wars hadn't been out in like a couple of months, so it was kind of weird getting into this book. It was like,
oh, that's a cool opening splash page.
I know, right? I love that page.
Oh, so, seeing it on paper. You know, our PDFs don't do it. You know, our review copies don't do it justice.
Right.
It really does. I mean, look at this, people. And for the benefit of the people watching the YouTube feed, that's pretty insane.
Yeah. See, and yeah, like you said, reading that digitally, that it doesn't kind of give it to the props that it deserves. But it is a beautiful splash. So,
you know, if anything, I was about to say, if if you thought of introducing Star Wars fans to the comics, I think that's the splash page you show them.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, the one thing I can say about the book is it's kept the tone of the universe pretty decently. And
that's awesome.
No exception.
That's pretty awesome. I haven't read it yet. I think I'm a few issues behind. But, you know, I'm glad to see that, you know, you're still enjoying it and it's still keeping your interest.
Yeah. But like I said, it just felt like it's been a while since it's come out.
Gotcha. You know?
But other than that, yeah.
All right. Do you want to switch over to some DC or stay with Marvel?
Yeah, sure, switch it.
I see Blue Beetle Rebirth number one was the only Rebirth book from this week, sort of introducing the character of Blue Beetle, past and present, Ted Kord and Jaime Reyes, back to the DC Rebirth proper universe. Ted Kord being the mentor to young Jaime Reyes. And there's a lot of... Keith Giffen is the writer, so there's a lot of... If you're familiar with his writing, there's a lot of the humor you would normally find in his books. A lot of it in the dialogue between Jaime and his classmate friends. Let's see. And also a lot of the funny dialogue between Ted Kord and Jaime Reyes. Jaime wanting to be a kid and not have to go off and do these...
superhero things?
Yes, right. And complaining over the, not the phone, but they have like a, well, I guess like sort of the
Beetle communicator, the Beetle phone?
Right.
Oy.
Complete my words for me.
Is there a Beetle cave?
Well, it's not even like a phone you see. I don't think it's even a phone you see, if I remember correctly. It's just like earpiece. They're talking through, you know, earpiece.
The Beetle Bluetooth on the Beetle tooth.
Oh. Actually, no, because I believe Jaime actually just gets a phone call from him. And there, Jaime goes out to fight these two villains who turns out to be, they're like robots. And it's, I think they were like testing his strength and or testing his powers to see how they work. Oh, and Dr. Fate shows up because he's going to be a reoccurring guest star in the book.
Okay.
He shows up. The original Dr. Fate.
Oh, okay.
Because I guess they're just like kicking another one to the curb, maybe.
Oh, no.
Oh, damn.
Not sure. He might show up too, but for now, it's just the original Dr. Fate shows up to Ted Kord to let him know that everything he thought he knew about the Scarab is wrong.
Oh.
You know, it's not from science or from space. It's a mystical item.
Mumbo jumbo, you mean?
Mystical mumbo jumbo.
that's a callback.
Yeah, we haven't had any Jonathan Hickman books.
No, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of miss that.
A takeaway for me after reading the book was, you know, everyone associates Blue Beetle and Booster Gold as being the, you know, comedic duo, but now I was wondering, is Booster Gold being replaced by Blue Beetle version 2? Just the way that they interacted with one another, they were just bouncing off one another. Kind of reminded me of Blue Beetle and Booster Gold. They also reminded me that, you know, when is Booster Gold going to get this ongoing series that people have been clamoring for a while?
Who's been clamoring for that?
Oh, I feel like people always ask about Booster Gold. Booster Gold and Shazam.
Yeah.
Not that one I can kind of see, but I guess. Yeah. Okay, so forgive my ignorance on the Blue Beetle part, but Ted Kord was dead. Did he come back before? Obviously he came back before now. Did he come back and do 52, or did they just... What happened?
I don't even know if he actually showed up on screen in the new 52, because... I remember when Forever Evil started, it started with Ted Kord's father dying off-panel, and like Lex Luthor making a reference to it. And I think they like referenced, you know, he was in a plane with Ted, I think he was in a helicopter or a plane or something like that with Ted Kord Jr. That might have been Ted Kord, the one in this book, either was first referenced in Forever Evil or actually first appeared in Forever Evil during that scene. I can't remember if he was talked to, like, he was mentioning on screen, or if he actually was on the screen.
Hmm.
If that makes sense.
Okay, sure.
But besides that, I'm not sure if he actually ever appeared in a New 52 book. Right. Probably did, and I just missed it.
Right, because I know I've seen, like, some preview pages or something. I was like, wait, why is Ted Kord here? When did that happen? Not that I was really keeping up with DC all that closely to recognize all that, but I just noticed a couple things. I'm like, oh, okay, that's something I should know. I mean, right. I should know, but didn't recognize this what it was.
So, okay. As far as whether or not I actually keep up with it is another story.
Right.
Mm.
But I can say at least I read the Rebirth issue.
All right.
Oh, I forgot to point out something with that Mosaic book. It was, and Matt Wang mentions it up on Twitter. Yeah, Carl Randolph did the art for Mosaic, and I'm enjoying it. So, or, yeah, for that book. So it was looking pretty good.
Yeah, I'm a fan of his art, so however many issues he does for the initial arc and then leaves.
Oh, no. Well, the hope is, you know, it's arc and then, you know, alternating arc so that everything stays consistent shipping, right?
Yeah.
For however long it lasts.
Exactly. All right. Let's see here. How about, did anyone read Deathstroke number one? I know we were talking about it off the air just before we came on.
Yes.
Yeah, no, didn't get a chance to.
All right. Well, without spoiling too much, we have the, you know, what is supposed to be, well, what resembles an origin story. I think I'm probably the most familiar with, I guess, the old school pre-crisis origin, because the origin of Deathstroke the Terminator was pretty much played out in issues of pages of the New Teen Titans and Tales of the New Teen Titans, especially during the Judas contract later on. So what we have here is, you know, a couple of parallel stories and flashback stories that kind of explain how Deathstroke and his best buddy, his best friend, Wintergreen. I believe in the old school version, Wintergreen was much older than Deathstroke. In this, they seem to be a little bit closer in age. But there's a mission that they both kind of went on, and you know there's a couple of twists and turns. I can definitely say that this was not the clearest story. There was no real clear explanation of Deathstroke, how he's any more special than anybody else. There's some groundwork being laid here for the future stories involving what we understand to be Deathstroke's costume. I didn't realize that there was an armor now. This might be some more recent stuff the author... It's Chris Priest, right, on this?
Yes.
Right, so Chris Priest has, I guess, started to incorporate some of the more recent aspects of the Deathstroke story. You know, like I said, I didn't realize that he wore armor, you know, and that it might be powered. So that was a little new to me. But ultimately, what I liked about this was... the art. I hate to say this. The art was actually, you know, was actually pretty good. You can recognize the name Carlo Pagulayan. Anyone who's a fan of Greg Pak's run on The Incredible Hulk will recognize that name. He was the artist on the Planet Hulk, on a bulk of the Planet Hulk issues.
Ah, okay.
So, he's been around for a while. He's been kicking around. I don't think he... I think he may have been Marvel exclusive at some point, but I think now he's, you know, either a free agent or I don't know if he signed an exclusive with DC. But this seems to be pretty high profile job for him. So you know, I wish him all the best. I think the best part of this book, art wise, is probably Adeline Deathstroke's wife. That's probably the best part of the story. I hate to say it. Spoken like a true man, right? You guys missed me, didn't you?
Of course we did. Of course we did.
It's funny. Anyway. So,
okay, so, well, I guess it's still kind of early to tell. You think you're going to keep on this for another
probably,
issue or two?
Probably not. I was always interested in Deathstroke as a villain, as an occasional villain. I don't know if the character can really sustain a solo series. I did read some of the New 52 series, but I dropped off it pretty quickly. I dropped off that series pretty quickly. So gotcha. I don't
find out what's going on.
Exactly, I'm not confident that this is going to be a long-term thing. I know the character has an increased visibility because I believe he's on Arrow.
Was on
Arrow, right? So, anyway, all right.
Gotcha.
How about we bounce back to Marvel, unless someone read ROM number 2?
Did not yet.
All right. So,
Although, before you get on that, have you read any of the other Revolution stuff that they're doing outside of ROM? Because there's the Action Man book that's out. And
I am not, and I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
I won't talk about ROM yet because I wanted to include you on, because I wanted to talk about Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 10.
Okay.
Because it kind of ties into one of the news items that I know we're going to talk about later.
I hope. Okay,
and go for it. Because of the tie-in, you know, I don't want to necessarily spoil this news, but I'm going to hit the bell. So I read this book after that news broke, and it kind of colored my perspective. It definitely lent it kind of made me look at this book a lot more carefully than I may have in the past. There's also a very welcome guest appearance by Kamala Khan, a.k.a. Ms. Marvel, and I think that really helped the pacing of the story as well, because we're having Moon Girl's, you know, we're having a true rookie hero interact with a second-year player. You know, like, this is kind of a sports reference, you know?
I was about to say, at this point, and as far as Lunella is concerned, she's a vet, you know. But
right.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, because we know her as being, she was in not too long ago. She was in the same position as
exactly
the Moon Girl right now. Yeah,
exactly. You know,
it hadn't dawned on me that they're both Inhumans.
Yeah,
because I don't even think of Kamala as an Inhuman.
They don't really play that up as much as they used to.
They used to.
The beginning. Yeah.
Right, because if you guys remember, you know, there was a few issues where Medusa invited her over to Atalan.
Right, and she would pop in, and she had Lockjaw with her for a little bit.
Right.
And so, yeah, it was a little closer tied than it is now. She's kind of off on her own.
Well, she's now much more tied into Avengers, and soon, you know, will be tied into some of the other teen heroes. So.
Right.
But, no, but with regards to this issue, the recent news really colored how I read this, and I read it with a lot more care. But like I said, the guest appearance was very welcome because the interactions between the characters and Lunella's thoughts when, you know, like kind of giving us perspective, giving us her perspective on the interaction was really pretty enlightening for me. You know, I really kind of learned a lot about the character just by seeing how she was reacting to Ms. Marvel.
Yeah, which I thought that interaction was interesting because I remember, you know, all the initial interactions that Kamala has had with other heroes and how she's kind of, you know, fangirled out in another way. And we found in this case,
it's on the other girl. Yeah, the shoe's on the other foot.
Similarly, but yeah. She also has, you know, her personality that kind of makes it a little a different interaction.
Oh, definitely. You know, I honestly, I need to give this book a second chance. I know I dropped off it, I think, after issue 3. Mm-hmm. You know, and there was a couple of tough reads in there with the Fall People.
Right.
You know, I did not enjoy reading, you know, their parts of the story, and I think that's really what turned me off to this book. But I think after reading this book and understanding where this book is headed, I may be going into the back issue bin to dig these up.
Yeah, like I gotta figure the Fall People stuff because it makes sense given, you know, Moon Girl, Devil Dinosaur. You know, they had to have an intro arc that had some tie-in to the
older version, right?
Right, so that kind of made some sense, but I'm kind of glad they got past that because it was getting low. All right, doesn't make sense. I got a strange feeling they'll probably be back, but you know that's going to happen.
Right, you know, I'm kind of glad that we're in the, you know, that she's been kind of inserted into the Marvel universe at large with this, and that's really I guess maybe that's what's piqued my interest as opposed to dealing with the Fall People.
Well, my curiosity was especially when we had the issue of, what was it, like 2 issues ago when Amadeus Cho showed up?
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of wondering then, I was like, wait, are they doing this to actually tie it in, or are they doing this because they felt like this book needed some, you know, needed some quote-unquote
like
star power to kind of, to kind of boost it a little bit, but now it seems like the former was the case, or right. As it looks right now, because they hadn't done what they used to do. I was like, hey, this book's doing not bad. Throw Spider-Man in it, or,
right.
You know, whoever was the hot person, or Wolverine, whoever was the hot one at the time.
Right. I'm wondering if, have they announced the roster of the new Champions team yet?
Yeah.
Is Lunella on that?
No.
Okay. I'm surprised.
It's the three young Avengers on the all-new, all-different Avengers. Nova, right. Ms. Marvel, Spider-Man, Miles Morales,
right.
And totally awesome Hulk.
Iron Patriot, Tony.
Oh, that's Tony right. Hulk. And a Vision character.
The daughter, that's in right. Cyclops.
Yeah. That's right, that's right. Yeah, they could do without Cyclops. Put Ludinil in there.
Well, now they hit every...
Sorry, classic!
They hit every geographic... You have your... All they're missing is a space character, I guess. Or a cosmic character. Or Nova.
Nova. Yeah, Nova.
Yeah, you have a cosmic character, you're a Spider-Man, spider character, you're a mutant, you're an Inhuman, mm-hmm. a Hulk.
And I suspect that probably there will... Ludinella may show up, or at the very least some other young heroes or youngest heroes will probably show up, you know,
right,
at that time.
Right. Gotcha.
Given the name of the book, maybe Hercules will show up again.
Is Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur a series I need to try to catch up on?
I think so.
Tim
did the same thing I did, because that Fall People story was just starting to just get to me. I couldn't keep up with it. So... inserting her into the Marvel Universe at large made the story a lot more interesting to me. So I need to go back and read the Totally Awesome Hulk issues and then go forward from there.
Well, I stuck it out because, as with most beginning arcs of a book, you kind of got to get back past set up and see if it was actually going to go somewhere. So it ended up working out pretty decently. The book is kind of a delight, but at the same time, it's like they are seemingly... trying to make, not that she wasn't already an interesting character, but I'm not sure what they're fully trying to set her up as, but what they're doing with her right now has been enjoyable to read. I don't know, the Devil Dinosaur part is still kind of a whatever, but it's been an interesting read.
I liked it, I really did, and it's a sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me, believe it or not. Yeah.
Okay.
I really liked the insight in this issue of Ludinella's thinking and how she saw, seeing Ms. Marvel through her eyes.
Right, and I think that was the part that did it for me also, because it was like, okay, just like we said previously, it's like Kamala's found herself in this pretty much a similar way not too long ago, so it's real cool that she's actually, paying it forward. I don't know whether, wittingly or not, I guess she recognizes it, but she's just kind of playing her role, being the person that we know she is,
Yeah.
Now, the only thing was that I kind of hated that the interaction went the way that it was, because it seemed like there could have been a little bit more to it, because of the fact that Kamala was in Ludinella's shoes not too recently.
Yeah, but I think they also want. I thought that they had enough of an interaction. They did have to obviously move their own story along. They still have this Kid Kree character who I'm not familiar with, having that character develop a bit, and they're also developing, Lunella's civilian life character, like her life as a civilian, in school, which is weird because we're so used to seeing the Peter Parker side of the story, but this is the Peter Parker female version side of the story. So that's, it's interesting. I'm kind of curious to go back and read what I missed to see how this has developed and how they've developed her, her personality in dealing with some of her classmates who are obviously not as intellectually gifted as she is. And that's a teaser for the news story later on.
Okay, I have you have to send me whatever this is, because I don't know if I actually have it in
what? Or was this last week?
I don't know.
Really? Okay, we'll get to it.
You have to let me know, because I don't know.
So. Don't worry. We'll deal with it. We'll deal with it. All right. Let's see.
Oh, well, the one last thing I was going to say, because there's a part of I'm going to get this word right, Duncan, because it's not that hard of a word, Ludinella, about her personality that kind of weirdly strange makes me think of Dr. Octopus.
Yeah. Socially awkward, maybe?
Well, yeah. To the point of arrogance in some cases, but at the same time, she's a kid, so you can... Some of that snottiness is still there, but at the same time, she's a genius kid, but also has this complex about her.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. All right, what else did you guys read? Got to move this along.
Yeah, I was about to say, let's do that since it's kind of...
Go ahead, I didn't read it, go ahead.
I like this issue because a lot of... things came to light. A lot of Al Ewins, I guess, set up a lot of seeds that are coming now to finally fruition.
It was neatly written out.
Yes. He was having fun going back to reference things from like issue 3 and 5, and it's like, wait, what?
Exactly.
I guess the story of Dwight Tigers isn't over, but he sort of I guess, ended this version of the White Tiger. And for those who don't know, it's two of them in this issue.
They're kind of in a different, slightly different place as they were going into it.
Right, and we see how Roberto Da Costa was spying on the Maker, who originally was spying on the New Avengers.
Oh, that sounds cool.
AIM.
It is what it is, yeah.
We had, I guess, appearance from Warlock.
Those new mutant ties.
So, if the Tony Ho character, she wasn't she the star of the Secret Wars Mighty Avengers like 2-issue series that Al Ewan also?
No, you're thinking of Faiza Hussein.
Yeah,
that's it.
Captain Britain.
Okay, I'm getting my Al Ewan women characters mixed up.
No problem.
I like Tony Ho.
Yeah, she's interesting. Now, okay, so let's talk about that for a second.
Because I don't understand. I don't know with a Pod. I don't know. I know Pod was introduced in Hickman's Avengers series, right?
Right.
But I don't. That was like 2 years ago at this point. I don't remember anything about that character, and I don't remember it being a woman in the suit, which isn't a big deal. I just don't remember. Like, and she stayed in the suit to keep Pod alive.
So basically, okay, so if I remember this correctly, this came out of Inhumanity, and Pod is a planetary defense system who, I guess, got introduced, came to Earth, crash-landed in Denmark, Sweden, wherever Ico was from.
And bonded with her,
correct. Because at the time, there was a couple of things going on. You had, it was like, okay, there was the brains of the planet was in here, and like Inhumanity had a couple of things going on, but it was all just to serve, I guess, going into Secret Wars or the lead up to Secret Wars or whatever. I don't remember. It's kind of a blur, but I think that's when it came out, if I'm not mistaken. And that's pretty much just a Pod. So she bonded with the armor or whatever to keep it alive. But since what happened last issue kind of took that out of the equation. then I don't think we have that. Although I think Pod's supposed to be in Champions also.
No, she's in New Avengers. Or New Avengers. US Avengers.
US Avengers.
Oh, God. Yeah. US Avengers. It's been 2 weeks now since I've been on, you know, and I'm just like, that's a thing, isn't it?
Right. Which also brings up another slight setup, because we see Dr. Tony Ho in Rescue Armor, which she's also going to be in US Avengers as Iron Patriot, from what I'm understanding.
Yep.
Okay.
So going back to what I was before I really forget. So the Tony Ho stuff is kind of interesting, because if you don't know, she is the doctor of Jensen Ho, who helped make Iron Man. And as we found out from Black Widow last week, she had that Natasha had a hand in that happening. She was the one who kidnapped Jensen Ho in order for him to be where Tony was, and you know, setting off the chains of events that started Iron Man, basically. So I'm kind of curious, because Tony should have some beef with Natasha when she finds out, or should she ever find out?
What's beef?
So that part is kind of curious to me, if that's ever actually going to happen, or just, you know, what have you, but it is what it is. But as far as New Avengers is concerned, so yeah, we see Pod and Tony having a moment, because you know, Pod is seemingly no longer with us, but the person that was inside is still around and in some armor. We'll see what's happening in that going forward and going into U.S. Avengers, because I guess that was the setup that this is starting up. You know, like we already see her in armor, with both of them in armor, and we already know they're going to be there. So, and they seem to have a thing with each other, also.
Gotcha.
But the other cool thing about this book was, like, I kind of like seeing, especially the last couple of issues, seeing Bobby kind of in control. Like, you see last issue, he was, like, even though he didn't have his powers, he was still, you know, fighting Omnitronicus or whatever the case may be, you know, using his X-Men training, and that was cool to see. And knowing that it was like, yeah, this is all this, we played you type of thing that Bobby kind of cooked up with everybody, and going back and seeing it all kind of come back into place, you know, against the Maker was really cool to see, because you would have never thought, all those years ago, back in New Mutants, seeing Bobby the way he was and seeing him as he is now.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's quite a change. Well, power's in that.
You know what's funny about that? Very quickly before we move on, I feel like they're getting ready to kill him off because that's what they did with Richard Rider.
Well, and they did. Well, supposedly that may be the case because we did get a vision, you know, a Ulysses vision that's saying Songbird is going to be at his funeral.
Mm.
So whether that's actually going to take place or this is a part of something else, we don't know. Like, it could be one of those things. It's like, yeah, there may be a funeral for him, but is he actually really dead, or it could be a part of some other plan or something? We don't know.
In the September solicits, there's a cover of them at his funeral.
Yeah.
At whose funeral? Sunspot's?
Yeah.
Yep.
I totally didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I totally just came off the dome. That was fresh off the dome just now.
Yeah. No, they've actively mentioned that, so...
Wow, I'm a little behind on my New Avengers reading, so I didn't even, you know, but it occurred to me the parallel between the character's development, you know, because of what Roddy was saying just now, and what they did with Richard Rider in Annihilation, where, you know, we remember the character that as he was in New Warriors and even earlier than that in his previous incarnation, you know, in the previous series, and all of a sudden he's basically like this lead, this leading space hero man.
Mm.
So...
And speaking of a conversation that we had before we started recording, Annihilation is one that I have to put on the list because I had never read it.
Oh, you got to do that. That's awesome.
It's on my list.
You got to read it. That's awesome stuff.
That whole section in there, especially with the old Guardians and whatnot, I need to go ahead and read that because there was a couple of different. They had a couple of different events going on then. But anywho, and the fact that they're, I guess, killing off Sunspot and Richard Rider's coming back is kind of interesting. But
hey, yeah, seriously,
since you brought that up.
Yeah,
it's funny that Richard Rider is coming back, but Sam Alexander still can't find his father.
Oh.
Well, I guess maybe they're going to play into that when he does come back. I don't know. Yeah. That seems something right for it. Oh, so, in closing on the Avengers, was there anything else on that one that I was going to bring up? Outside of Warlock and his Clint Eastwood reference, the White Tiger stuff. Al Ewan is still... I love his writings, and I don't know if I've mentioned this before, the fact that some of the stuff he does in his book has kind of, you know, kind of spread out to other people's books, like especially with the footnotes for characters when they enter, and the little witty intros to characters when they kind of come in on the pages and whatnot. That's kind of come in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I enjoy that.
All right, cool.
What's next? Or
are we getting towards rapid review or almost?
Yeah. I think so. I am, because I only got a couple left.
Okay.
Let's see. Titans number 2. The Titans are taking on some character called Kadabra, who, for some reason...
Abracadabra.
Yes, he's a magician.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah. Reach out and grab, yeah. Sorry.
Somehow he has knowledge of pre-New 52 history, because I want to say he's familiar with the Titans back when they were Teen Titans.
They mentioned that last issue, if I'm not mistaken, when he popped back up.
So there, it has that going for it. They take on some doubles of themselves, basically the teen Titan versions of themselves, so back when like Nightwing was Robin and so forth, and Wonder Girl doppelganger uses her, they don't call it a lasso of truth, lasso of persuasion or something like that Arsenal calls it. He gets wrapped around with it and he confesses that he's in love with Donna Troy, which surprises her. And then at the end of the issue,
nobody else, but...
yeah. And then the end of the issue is teased with the death of a Titan, but more than likely,
have a Titan book without that.
Yeah. Well, you can be minus a Titan.
Yeah.
If they're actually dead. But right. The series is only the second issue, so I can't be too harsh on it. But
don't let it be the Black Girl.
What?
Not to go. Just keep going.
Technically, it's the third issue because you can count the rebirth issue. But it's not moving at the pace I'd like it to move. Probably because it's only shipping once a month and everything else it feels accelerated with the double shipping. But yeah, just not into it. And it's going to be an important comic since it has Wally West in it, who's tied to the whole mysteries of the New 52. So it's going to be an important book, but it's kind of a drag to read so far.
You know, beginning arc, all that. So.
Yeah.
And Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 3. I'm enjoying this series. I'm actually reading Green Lantern books again, or at least one of them. The Green Lanterns, I'm which is the one I probably should enjoy the most since it has, like, the two newest Green Lanterns. But that one is like, eh, the art on it's not so... It's one of the double shipping, well, this is too, I guess. But, like, the art on it I'm not too crazy with, and the story's just meh. But for Hal Jordan and Green Lantern Corps, it's got Hal Jordan, you got Guy Gardner and John Stewart, Sinestro Corps ruling the galaxy, taking the place to Green Lantern Corps. Hal Jordan's fighting, has encountered some Sinestro Corps members, so he's been fighting them the last two issues, and they somehow have this new power or new ability where they can increase their ring's power level, which overcomes Hal Jordan, and he's about to get captured and taken to Sinestro at the end of the issue. But the art on it is fabulous. Rafa Sandoval has been doing this initial arc, and colorist's name I don't have on me at the moment, but the colors, so for Green Lantern books, you want to have some great colorists, because you have to, you know, do the whole color spectrum and then do space scenes very well. And I'm trying to bring up the issue now so I can give a shout out as PC and Dirt is about to join on, I see.
A wild dirt appears.
Wow!
A wild dirt. You gonna catch me?
Throw a Pokeball at him.
Oh, no!
So everyone pick up their phones and start flicking, right? Goodness.
Is my camera not coming through?
Not right now.
No, what's that? No.
All right, frigga. We don't need to see you anyway.
Rebel.
Oh, there it is. There we go.
There it goes. What's up, Dirt? How you doing?
Oh, man.
It's been a weird couple of weeks. You know what I'm talking about.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let me see if I can pull up these covers. Give me a second nice here.
Spider Glitch mask you got there.
Yeah, this is the Rey Mysterio one. We actually had some guys come through the state fair a couple years ago with authentic Lucha Libre masks. So,
I regret not buying any when I was in Mexico in July.
You should. Granted,
I should have, but I wasn't feeling the best. I was experiencing one of those.
Did you drink the water?
I didn't drink the water. Well, I did drink the water, but also ate at a resort. That happened to eat at the last couple of days, but on like day four, it finally hit me, and then I had to go to the following day. We went on we went on an excursion, and the excursion, one of the stores there had the mask, but by the time I found it, it was like late in the day, and I wasn't feeling the best, so I just wanted to go home, so.
Should have gone out, man.
Yeah. Well, I went out, I saw the mask, and I think they were like $30, and I was just like, I don't want it, I want to go home. But all the right. The colorist on Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps is Tamu Murray, doing awesome work.
So I guess you guys were just talking about that?
Yeah, we're doing the rapid reviews.
Yeah.
So, yeah, one thing I'll throw in real quick is that my one disappointment with Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps is that it's turned Sinestro back into just a straight villain, the most, you know, despicable guy in the universe, which is a shame only because the Sinestro series that just ended played him as a more nuanced character.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it much more like he's doing bad things but for a good cause type of thing. Like he's trying to save his people and he'll do whatever it takes. Whereas now in this it's just much more of he wants
the universe.
Yeah, and he's just trying to make everybody fearful because that's where he gets his power. So it feels like it's kind of taking a step back as far as that goes. But otherwise the artwork has been great. Like you were saying, the coloring, I'm sure you were saying it was fantastic because it looks great.
Yes.
I mean, it is, like, it feels like it's a top-tier book. It doesn't feel like it's one of those, you know, B-level books anymore. This does feel like it should be, if you're reading Batman and Superman and Action and Justice League, you should be reading this and Flash. Mm-hmm. Like, it does feel like all of those are, you know, top-of-the-line books where they should be.
And I was just saying how I'm actually reading a Green Lantern book again.
How long has it been?
It's been a while. Been at least, like, a year and a half, 2 years.
Hmm.
Oh, and yes, Dirt, your covers are reversed again.
Okay, so they're backwards right now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so, wait, I think
mirror
I
image. Know
if I what to ask on the stream, but...
And Roddy, you're underwater.
Of course I am.
There we go! There. Now it's complete. Yeah. Correct.
All right. Well, that's something.
Yep.
Do you want to run through any of your books while you're fresh and ready to yap.
I don't know that I'm ready to say anything okay. right now, but no, Action Comics, again, it's fighting with Doomsday, and he actually has a plan to defeat Doomsday, and it's a plan that, you know, actually makes sense. The artwork on this was really good. Sometimes in the, we've seen with the books, these ones that are biweekly, because they switch art teams back and forth, that sometimes you get just an odd looking issue out of the middle of nowhere. But this one, Segovia, I'm not sure who that is,
yes.
But looks nice. And this particular story, I don't want to give away what it is, because the whole point of the story is he's trying to fight to get to a means of stopping Doomsday, and he finally gets it. But it was fun, and it's funny because some of the stuff they've done in the other super family of books have shown that what he chooses here may not be the ultimate way to finally stop Doomsday once and for all. So it works for now, but there's definitely been a backdoor in the DC universe where this may not be the end of Doomsday. Probably definitely won't be the end of Doomsday. I did read Blue Beetle. For the most part, I enjoyed it. I thought the dynamic with Ted and Jaime was really good. The artwork was really nice. The one thing I hated, though, is the supporting cast. Jaime's friends in this book. Oh, my God. I just wanted to punch that girl right in her face. Like someone, you know, it's like you do somebody a favor and they get mad because you use the wrong words. And it's like, oh, shut up, you know.
They're young kids.
Just, no, no. She's just being uppity, tidy, stick up her butt. Shut up. That's it. Just shut up. That's all I'm saying. Deathstroke. I enjoyed Deathstroke. Even though, again, the one thing Priest is doing is kind of taking the character back. And so some of the fun stuff that we saw them do at the beginning of the New 52 before Rob Liefeld ruined Deathstroke, I was kind of hoping they'd go back to that, but instead it seems they're resetting the character back even further. But they are playing up his family, which is a nice angle. The fact that he does, you know, have this other life that he more or less left behind, it's coming back to haunt him, which kind of happened in the old series, but here it's much more personal, whereas in the old series, it started out, I think, well-meaning, and then it just kind of lost itself along the way. But here, I think it's much more grounded, so it'll probably work out a little bit better. So it's nice to see Jim Owlsey back doing comics. And this, I didn't like the Rebirth one as much, just because it was, you know, moving the pieces around just to get him to a point where he could tell a story. But now that he's actually telling the story, I enjoyed it more. Flash. Still good, but this was one of those where I think the artwork just didn't hold up quite as much, because of the you know, the fill-in team coming in to keep these books on schedule. But the story is still good. Barry Allen has a new girlfriend that's nowhere else in continuity, so it's nice to see them, you know, do something new and different with the character. And they're still playing with the Speed Force and how it's worming its way through the DC universe and just hitting more and more people and adding more and more speedsters. So it's fun to see that Speed Force family build up again. Titans. Man, I just don't like Brett Booth artwork. I'm sorry, Tim. I just I can't.
I mean, even I'm kind of like falling out of favor with it, I admit.
But I will say that at least the story went, I expected it to go one way and it took a left turn. And part of that is because we know things that the characters don't. So the characters are trying to solve a mystery, so they're kind of, if you want to say, retracing their steps through history, so to speak, which we know, like, you're going the wrong way, you're looking the wrong place, but I guess it makes sense for them. But the one thing that is nice in here is that we again get references and clues to the fact that their history is wrong, and certain characters who mess with time travel and whatnot have realized that this history is wrong and these things don't make sense for where they're at right now, because certain memories shouldn't be there, certain relationships shouldn't be there, and so that mess up is you know, part of that whole DC Rebirth. So that little thread is still continuing through Titans, which is nice to see. I'm glad it wasn't just one of those things where they mention and then it's like, oh, we'll get back to it in 2 years, you know. It actually is kind of playing out there. I think that's it for DC, for what I read. And I didn't read a... Well, as I say, I didn't read a whole lot of Marvel. The only Marvel I read was Iron Man. Have you guys talked about that one?
Yeah, but yes. Chime in.
Yes.
Well, the only thing I was going to say is, once again, I just feel like this whole thing of Tony's real parents being nobody is so anticlimactic. It's like, oh, you're finally going to find out who his real parents are. And then you find out, and it's like, oh, it's this person you've never heard of, and this other person you've never heard of. In the middle of stories that you've never read about, doing things that you don't care about. You know, it was just kind of like, ugh. The one thing, though, is Bendis is either pulling out some obscure references from the Marvel Handbook, or he's actually laying seeds for one of these characters to turn out to be somebody, mm-hmm. because in the deep recesses of the Marvel Universe, there was a character named, I hope I remember this correctly, Jude the Entropy Man, I think is the correct name.
Really?
And he was an agent of AIM, and there was some... This book had a lot of references, of course, to S.H.I.E.L.D. and AIM.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's name is...
Yeah, with Contessa de La Fontaine, Allegra. It's been a while since we've seen her.
And one of the things they mention is they make some offhanded comment somewhere about, like, the director of healthcare for AIM or something like that. I forget exactly what the title was, but it was just some throwaway line in the middle of the book. But whatever that title was... actually was the position that the character Jude the Entropy Man held in AIM.
Entropic Man,
that's what it was. Okay. So either Bendis just pulled out some random character and said, oh, I'm just going to use a couple of these things just, you know, as kind of like a fun little wink, wink, nudge, nudge, or he's planting the seed for it to turn out that his dad becomes this obscure villain, or maybe this villain's going to reappear, or because of Secret Wars, he never appeared before, and this is the first time he's appearing now in the new Marvel Now universe, you know, whatever. So I'm not sure if he's, you know, laying a foundation, or if he's just giving, you know, the geeks who've read some old comics, you know, just some names to play around with. But that's the one thing I found interesting with it. But otherwise, I read this entire book, and I just kept waiting for it to go somewhere, and waiting for it to get to something that seemed important or something that made sense or brought it back to Tony, and it just didn't. And so I got to the end of it, and I was just like, oh, that's it? Like, all right, I guess. So I was kind of disappointed in that.
I hadn't thought about the possibility of the father being spun into like a new villain or a new character that will reappear later on. So that's a good theory.
So Marvel has been dropping some obscure cuts here and there in the past couple of years, so it could stand to reason that he is kind of doing that.
You know, I wonder if there's some sort of Marvel editorial betting pool of, like, writers sitting around going, oh, well, I'm going to work the most obscure reference into my comic this month.
Well, I feel like
they've always done that, yeah.
Well, especially the last couple of years, they've been doing that. Because
it's like they can't use mutants as much anymore, so they have to, like, dive into the Marvel back bin to find obscure characters to bring to the forefront.
I would say ever since Secret War, but actually think about, I guess, Hickman's run of Avengers. It's kind of been before that. So it's been a few here and there. Matter of fact, I got a book this week that had a weird obscure reference in it, if we can get to that real quick.
Go for it.
Captain Marvel number 8. So, again, the cover is misleading because, you know, that little square off that happens none of. we first see Carol and T'Challa. Well, first we see pretty much a week in the life of Captain Marvel. You know, you see her with various events, with various superheroes going around, you know, stopping stuff before it happens, as that's been happening. Then we get into her giving T'Challa a tour of her operations, as it were, in dealing with all of the visions, and it kind of gives you a side of, you know, what kind of oversight is going on with it and this and that and the other. So I'm kind of wondering if this book takes place before the last Captain Marvel issue and the last Ultimates issue, because Kamala shows up, Miles Morales shows up, and she, you know, she's still all gung-ho at this time, where in her book she kind of has turned a corner on some things. But Carol does mention later on when she's talking to, after she finishes with T'Challa, and, you know, and Miles and Kamala come back from a mission that seems really ground level in scope, which is still giving me an issue with these visions that are happening. And something actually comes up in this issue where T'Challa asks Carol about the fact
that... Oh, my God, I see the deep dive.
Yeah.
Oh, so, my God, I see the deep dive. Holy cow! Uh-huh.
So T'Challa asks Carol about the scope of Ulysses' visions, how they're largely U.S.-based, but some of the ones that are the mission are from other places because apparently, you know, he's been allowed to, you know, look at international TV and whatnot, and it kind of plays into the fact that, well, yeah, how are these visions coming about, and why are they so largely set here and there? And like, you get a little bit of insight in that, but it still kind of raises a couple of other questions. Now, to what Age of Sabrina is referring to.
USA. USA. Ah. USA.
So, what Age of Sabrina is referring to is a mission that ends up happening after... after T'Challa, but before Clint, I think. I can't remember what the order of it, but either way, so they get this mission to where they find out that this guy who had powers like years ago still is in possession of these powers and was going to end up using it. And this character ends up being from, if I'm not mistaken, Secret Wars 2.
Yes! Secret Wars 2, like, where the first and second Beyonder issues.
Came to Earth, and yes, exactly, and this comes up because Beyonder comes to Earth and causes havoc and gives people powers, and this one guy, some schlub that he gives a power because of this award he has, and calls himself Thundersword, and he goes around, you know, wreaking havoc and whatnot, or whatever happened then. That guy and his family comes back into play because apparently he is still in possession of the award that he got that, you know, helped him.
Yeah, apparently basically, it transformed back, right? Like, at the end of that story.
The vision was that he was... That was going to cause, he was going to turn back and that was going to cause some issues. And apparently there was some power still in the award that's been building up slowly for some reason, which is starting to denote, as we find out later, that there may be some outside forces or an outside force exerting itself somewhere because, you know, seemingly they go and arrest this dude. And of course there's, you know, some outcry because this guy's got a family. He's just kind of barely getting by. And, matter of fact, this happens before she goes to see Clint, because now I don't remember, because she's kind of having some doubts about some stuff. And then you get to see, it was like, well, okay, what's going to happen to his family and this and the other, you know, because they're going in before he even did anything, you know, to arrest him. So then she goes to see Clint. They have a talk about what's been going on, and she kind of confides in him about how she's feeling about thing, and you know, Clint's, you know, talking to her back straight and straight arrow, as he tends to do. And she gets to a place, she leaves, and then, you know, we find out about the award still has some power, but that power is weirdly coming from somewhere else. But that's where they drop it right there, so I'm assuming that's going to come back up at some point, which kind of leads me to believe that there may be something else going on behind the whole Secret Wars thing, or somebody else may be behind it. I don't know if it's like the Beyonder's back, but apparently that's been brought into question because of this issue.
Sure.
So,
and I just read the part. I just read the panel that you were referring to, where there's something else. You know, there's something else afoot when it came to, when it comes to, you know, the power is kind of being reactivated in this object, the award that previously the Beyonder had transformed, had used to transform this guy into Thundersword. Mm-hmm. I was about to say, shout out to PCN underscore Dirt for showing off just now with the video feed, and all the. The impressive Transformers collection. There it goes. Look at that.
I had a slight technical hiccup, so I switched over to my alternate cam, and you can see my shelf porn.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Pretty good. All right, guys, we got to get into rapid fire. It's getting late.
Yeah, but that's pretty much that is. I don't know if anything's going to come out of that other part or not. And like this book has actually started asking some questions that I've been asking this whole time during Secret War 2 and opening up some more. I'm still a little light on this whole event right now, but yeah, there it is.
All right. So let me fire off the one rapid fire book I got, because I didn't have a chance to read a lot this week, is ROM number 2. It's the second issue of the IDW book, restarting the ROM mythology, using only what Hasbro owns, and starting, you know, and starting basically fresh with the same general concept that the Marvel series had, which was ROM is chasing dire wraiths to Earth, but not from Galador, but instead from a different planet whose name is just silly. Ultimately, what I found satisfying about this is that, you know, it does move the story along, But the unsatisfying part was towards the end of the issue when it's abundantly clear that they're about to jump into a crossover. I know it's emblazoned on the cover.
Yeah.
Well, and they did the same thing last issue anyway, so.
That's the thing that IDW right. has been building up to, though, for a couple months in the Transformers and right. G.I. Joe, and they're going to be debuting a Mask comic and right. Something else. So, yeah, I'm, you know.
Yeah, they drop very strong hints in this book. I'm just not happy about it because it feels like you're not giving this book a chance to really establish its footing. But at the end of the day, there's probably I'm fairly certain the majority of the readership of this book is going to be people who are nostalgic for the character and want to see where they're going with this new mythology.
Well, and it probably in the long run it'll help the book because anybody reading G.I. Joe or Transformers or whatever,
right?
Oh, there's a ROM comic. Oh, right, I remember hearing about that. Oh, I remember when that came out on Free Comic Book Day. Now I have an excuse to go out and check it out. And,
right.
You know.
No, that obviously you know is the driving force behind incorporating this book into this crossover so quickly.
Am I backwards again?
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
Now I'm good.
Yep.
All right. And that event starts next month, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they're going right into it. They're going right into issue 3 for this.
Right.
So because spoiler alert. I mean, we could have seen the. What's funny about this is that we could have seen this particular crossover when both characters were licensed at Marvel, but I was like, wait. Scarlet from G.I. Joe is in this issue? What the heck is going on in here?
they showed up. No, they showed up last issue too, so they're just kind of keeping that part going.
So,
actually, I don't know if you saw this, but they did a variant to make it look like a 3¾-inch action figure in the old G.I. Joe style.
Yes, I did see that live, but although I didn't opt for that cover at the store.
It makes me wish that they made a ROM that was that size.
Oh, of course. I always wanted a ROM.
Instead of that giant 12-inch one.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. The one that was just poorly designed. You know, that's why it didn't last. I picked up my physical copy. I picked up the Bob Layton cover at the for my physical copy. But I was enjoying this pretty much up until I realized that they're going to jump, you know, neck deep into the crossover. They also mentioned very, very casually that this world, this Earth that the IDW Hasbro universe is populating, the humanity starting to get used to the idea of alien robots walking the Earth. And I'm like, oh, yeah. So, that's it. Oh, go ahead.
Well, the one thing I was going to say is that the G.I. Joe books, and there actually was a G.I. Joe this week, they used to do another G.I. Joe series that was IDW's own original series. And then several years ago, they reached out to Larry Hama,
right.
And they asked him to come back and continue his Marvel run. And so this series that's running now is the Marvel run. This one has survived. Their original series has ended. It never could quite find the right groove, and they kept relaunching it.
Like three different volumes of it, and it didn't just take off. Even though they were all seemed like they could have done something. But
they were all decent. I mean, I don't think there was really a bad one among the bunch. But once you realize that everybody who's buying it are the same people who are buying the Marvel run, and you just continue the Marvel run, it's kind of hard to go back to those other ones. So the funny thing is that the comic that's running now is still the same comic based on the toys that was coming out in the 80s. And now that we're getting characters like Rom coming back, Mask is coming back, those are the ones that are going to be interacting, you know, with that G.I. Joe series. So technically, if you want to get started on this crossover, go back to the Marvel run of G.I. Joe number one and start with that. You only got 231 issues.
I know, right? Jeez.
Yep. All right. Rapid fire, people.
That was rapid fire, wasn't it?
Well, that was my rapid fire. Anybody else got anything?
Actually, yeah, I got one real quick. Kingsway West number one.
How was this? I meant to read this.
It was okay.
okay, ringing endorsement here, people.
Well, and I say that because it wasn't like there was any big sweeping actions happening. Like, we get introduced to Kingsway Law. We get introduced you to the world that he and everybody is in. And that's about all we get, which, granted, that's kind of enough. Apparently, has this turned into a miniseries? Because I saw, like, this is, like, one of four? Or was this always a miniseries?
I thought it was always a miniseries, but I could be wrong.
Okay, I thought it was
I'm
ongoing.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but that's how it says 104 on whatever else I saw. But in any case, so Kingsway Law is a Chinese gunslinger in the Old West, is around California. So basically, we have some different factions. We have The Chinese have a big part of California. The Mexicans still have Mexico. The Indians are somewhere over in the east. And then we have the United States of New York. In the California part where we are now, there's a spot called the Dead Zone. The Dead Zone, I believe it's called. And also, it is a world that has magic and dragons and whatnot. So basically, there is this near mythical element, version of gold called red gold, which has magical properties, and apparently everybody wants it. Somebody comes across it, who is the girl that's on the cover of this book. Mm-hmm. Kingsway.
Roddy, I hate to interrupt. I think you'd be so much better off reading your little note for this book. Just do it and let's roll.
All right, fine.
Should I get a bead for you?
No, I'm good. Let me tell you a little story about a man named Law, a man with a bounty on his head we never saw. He was a traitor to the king because he was being very cruel, and then there's a girl with some magical that comes looking for this dude. I'm fucking it all up. Red gold. Sought after, you see. So anyway, you get the point of that one. I forgot what. Anyway, So here we have all those elements. Apparently, Kingsway Law has a bounty on his head because of something he's done in his past, or because he was a traitor to the queen. And there are people after him in the beginning of the book, and the young lady that is on the cover, he's like, he has his wife who he meets during the course of the book, who is Mexican, and apparently, again, the Mexican and the Chinese are at odds with each other. Or I guess everybody's kind of at odds with each other, because they're kind of built out as, like, well, you got these different lands, but they're all here in the States. He meets his wife, and then he cuts to, like, some years later, where he's out trying to get some food. He comes across this young lady that's looking for him, but at first she doesn't recognize that it's, or she doesn't realize that it's him, because she has this dragon that's kind of hunting them. And then something happens, his place gets attacked, and then he goes off looking for this young lady, thinking she has something to do with it, and turned out that may not be the case, because some other things happen. So, like I said, we get the world, basically, a little bit of a sense of how the world is around this. There's a little bit of gunplay here and there, because, you see him fighting off some folks.
Gunplay!
Pretty much. And you see a little bit of magic and the fact that this red gold is kind of being sought out by various people. And that seems to be where this is going to head, and we don't still know Kingway's full story, because he's looking for his wife now because the place got attacked and she wasn't there, or she didn't find a body, so she either left or whatever. So now he's got this young girl that now knows who he is, and she needs him because apparently she was a traitor to she was some kind of rebel faction that ended up finding some of this red gold that everybody's after, and apparently she was a part of the Queen's Guard because she has a sword or something, or she took it from blood. We don't know. It's going to be. So we're going to start off on whatever adventure they set off on. Like I said, it was interesting enough to say that I would check out the next issue. I will say that because I'm kind of curious as to where this is going to go. The whole, out old west with magic type situation is appealing to me. So we will see how this works out. And it's a great pop, so,
Cool.
Ready for our clicks of the week?
Yeah.
I'm going to get mine out the way very quickly. It's a book that I haven't spoken about yet, but it is Detective Comics number 939.
Wow.
I'm doing this Batman series. I know Dirt's not a fan, but I like
It's gotten better. It's gotten better the last couple of
years. Just like I was complaining how
tight
it is.
I'm not a fan of that cover, though.
That's just like I've been complaining about Titans being slow, Detective definitely isn't, because once they got into it with the colony and all stuff going down with Batwoman and her father, and sort of, they've set up her father to be like one of those villains where, he believes what he's doing is right, so he thinks he's the hero, which of course all the great villains
are the hero in their own story, yeah.
There you go. Eddie Barrows is back on art, another plus. I like the opening couple pages where they flash back to the funeral of Thomas and Martha Wayne. And
yeah.
I almost said
Kim. Well, I knew you.
You can almost do the plot of a movie around that.
They thought it was so clever.
Oh, boy.
But I like the flashback scenes and the change in the art and coloring. It's more of a watercolor feel to it. And some strange subtext, some side story of Robin wanting to go off to school. But he may die next issue, so that might not happen. Of course, I doubt he actually dies. But
wah, wah.
Yeah. So that's my click of the week.
All right. And I love that Tim Sale. Is that Tim Sale? I think it's Tim Sale.
Doesn't look like Tim Sale.
Could be wrong. No, it's not? No. My apologies.
I like that's this cover. That's the alternate. You like that?
Yeah,
better like the alternate. Than this one?
Oh, that's all sorts of awful.
So, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out whether I want to go with either Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 10 or New Avengers number 15, because out of all of the books in the running, those two seem to be up at the top.
That's Raphael Albuquerque on the alternate cover.
Ah, okay.
And I think I will go with Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 10.
Me too, me too.
Yeah. Oh, sweet.
That's my click of the week.
Did you get the Sum cover?
No.
No, although looking at that, that's actually pretty cool. I like that.
Some of the Sum cover is actually not bad looking.
I like that cover. I'm going to have to go find that one. Dirt, you missed out. I was talking when we were talking about this book. I find myself more interested in this book now. Now that they've more fully involved her into the Marvel universe, and you know, putting in more guest stars and kind of bouncing her off of other Marvel heroes, and I may actually be interested in digging up some of the back issues on that, because I have issues 1 and 2. I think I dropped it when the Fall People stuff was still like going full guns and. Now that she's more of a Marvel hero, it's interesting. And with the developments that came this week,
it should be on Unlimited now, right? Or is it still too early?
No, I don't.
Probably the first 4 or 5, I would imagine, are there.
All right.
There's like a 4 to 6 month difference.
Gotcha. Dirt, did you put your pick in?
No.
Wait, before you do your dirt, I had one for you if you weren't going to show up.
Well, there was
what was it
this week? There's
no not
Duck Avenger.
Week. Duck Avenger number 0. Actually, I'm not even sure if that one's actually out or not, but we have it. So
yeah, it came out this week. Yeah.
Okay. But that was gonna be my pick for you.
Well, there's also this alternate cover that you could have gone.
Yeah, with, I saw that.
Avengers. Honestly, I think with everything I read, there was a lot of stuff that was good. Nothing really stood out as blowing me away, but the one book that I think opened itself up to a lot of possibilities that actually has me very interested in seeing where it goes is going to be Deathstroke.
Interesting.
Because I love the character, and when he's treated right, he's a great character. They just, a lot of times, they end up with just some Rob Liefeld horrible person
working on the book. Oh, no.
And the fact that they actually have someone really, really good focusing on it right now makes me hopeful that Deathstroke is going to end up, being a great read. It might end up, being one of those sleepers, down the way where once you get about 4 or 5 issues into it, you realize, maybe they're really building something fantastic here. And I've just got a lot of hope for the book. So I liked Hal Jordan. I actually liked The Detective a lot. I like this one. But I think this is going to be my click of the week.
Nice.
Hal Jordan's another good choice. That would have been a good one.
I could have gone with that one, but
yeah.
All right.
I need to check those out.
All right. Cool. So I guess before we move on to news, let me do a quick ad read. Let me find the quickest ad read we have, which is... the shortest ad read we have is for Amazon. So visit CSPN.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop to help keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, or jewelry, etc., etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles podcasts free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today. All right.
Alrighty, in cinematic news, the Guardians of the Galaxy will appear in Avengers Infinity War, per Vin Diesel. So he said that in a Facebook live stream.
And suddenly 20 PR people were like, we told him not to say anything! We told him not to say anything!
I know, right? Speaking of Marvel movies, Michael Pena is returning for Ant-Man and the Wasp. Let's see, the Captain America Civil War comes out next month, so there's a bunch of behind-the-scenes videos and deleted scenes being shown on the internet. Apparently there's a Black Widow backstory you didn't see in Captain America Civil War.
Any other movies?
Thor could be paying Doctor Strange a visit in Ragnarok. Marvel Studios narrows Captain Marvel director search to 3 candidates.
Hold on, back up a second. Devo's Mark's Mother's Ball could possibly be composing Thor 3. So
is that
insert deep? I'll say, Tim, you're young. So Devo was a band back in the 80s. They had a couple of hit songs, most notably one called Whip It. I'm sure you have heard it. And he was the lead guy in that group.
Okay.
He's also been doing work on Yo Gabba Gabba.
Yeah.
The last few years.
See, I'm not young. I just don't know music.
I don't know.
Or you don't have a little kid
before you, though.
I was going to say, you don't have little kids.
You said in the 80s. I was born in 1980.
Were you? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, still, though, when they were around, you were, you know, way either way, it didn't matter.
Yeah, I'll gladly admit I don't know music.
But you've never seen Yo Gabba Gabba?
I've seen the words on the screen before.
It's like, you either don't have kids or friends who do drugs.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I know Yo Gabba Gabba. Yeah, I've heard of that. All right, so the Whippet guy is going to be doing the Thor 3 music. Yeah. So the Captain Marvel director search is apparently narrowed down to Nikki Cairo, Leslie Linka Glatter, and Lorraine Scafaria.
Who?
Okay.
People.
Yeah.
Doug Liman to direct Dark Universe for DC.
I think it's Liman?
The Gambit movie. It's the Justice League Dark movie.
Yeah, Liman, I think it is.
Liman.
Yeah.
So, another hit for the Gambit movie that shouldn't be made anyway.
It continues to try to eke along yet. Yes, still.
Spider-Gwen is going to be in Ultimate Spider-Man this weekend.
Okay. Pretty cool.
The November 2016 solicits came out. But to your comic book website site of choice to read up on those. In comic news, Marvel announces science, tech, and math-devoted comic book covers.
Science?
STEM. Urban Legends Media presents Sheriff Wright, issues 1 and 2.
Yeah, so this is a Kickstarter. It's basically about a real-life person named Marvel Wright, who was a slave, who ended up being the sheriff of a town called Freedom. And I guess this is a Kickstarter for the first couple of books.
Okay.
It's going to try to be a Kickstarter. I mean, an ongoing.
Iron Man's successor will be named Ironheart.
Ironheart! That's a Lionheart from Jean-Claude Van Damme, if your eyes remember.
I was thinking
that.
Braveheart, but...
Yeah. Oh! Yeah.
Nobody ever talks about the failed Iron Man spinoff, Iron Lung, with the guy who just sat there and didn't do anything.
Oh, that was Method Man.
Oh, no. Oh, boy.
What else we got here? The 2016 Hugo Award winners were announced. Congrats to all those winners.
Yep, yep.
The Legend of Zelda Art and Artifacts book is coming to Dark Horse. Marvel teamed up with Harley Davidson to create 25 superhero motorcycles.
So expect a tie-in comic book at some point, because they've done this before.
Mm-hmm.
Free Mosaic Prelude comic book introduces the new Inhuman. We talked about that during the comic review section.
Oh, that was a free prelude. Okay.
Yeah, you can find it on Marvel and Comixology.
Okay.
Their digital sites.
There's an animated Vision statue somewhere.
Well, it's a Vision statue. It's not animated, but yeah, I guess an animated version of Vision.
And Power Man and Iron Fist is going to introduce one of the most crucial villains in Marvel U going forward.
Paste-Pot Pete.
Oh!
No, Stilt Man.
Oh!
That was Daredevil's doing, sorry.
Yeah, pretty much. Is that the last story?
That's it. So I don't know what story you were talking
about.
Oh,
no, it's it is? It's not a new story per se, but there's an article. I guess it would be clickbait that I wanted to just bring up very quickly. So the creators behind Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur were interviewed for an article on CBR, and they talk about how Moon Girl became the smartest person in the Marvel U. I know that we've talked about this on previous shows, but they kind of delve, they go a little deep and do a little bit of behind the music type discussions about how they got to this point and how it sort of developed organically as opposed to being a mandate from the beginning.
Wait, is that an old article? Because I feel like I've heard something about
it. Oh, no, I've seen that August, before. It's today. It's dated today, August 24, okay. 2016. I'll send you the link.
I feel like I've seen a similar article from a few months back. But, okay, cool. We'll put it in the clickbait section.
You got it.
Clickbait.
There it is.
All right, so that wraps up tonight's episode of Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay! Of course, I went to the chat window, so now I got to click back to the sound effect. Yay!
Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at CBCron. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. Agent 70 is at Agent_70 on Twitter and Instagram. And PCN_Dirt is at PCN_Dirt on Twitter. Go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. And what's your Vine link?
Vine.co/vinecomicreviews with no vowels. Drop all the vowels out.
Oh, that's what that means.
Yeah.
So witty. And we'll be back next week for more comic book goodness, news, reviews, and so much more.
Yep.
We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey! It's Dr. Doom.